If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today. If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host Lou in 4K. Apparently,
just you know, I hear getting caught up, as Usher would say. You don't know the song "Caught Up" by Usher? I'm so caught up, got me feeling it. Caught up, I don't know what it is, but you seem to get twisted.
Oh, I guess not.
Caught up? No, okay.
I guess not.
I probably got those lyrics wrong too.
2009, huh?
I guess.
2004.
Dude, that was a bop. Like, I would dance to that song to this day. Maybe, once again, I'm not saying showing my age in a negative way, but like when you're like very fond of a song you can dance to from 2004, you're still showing your age in like the happiest way you can.
Yeah, that's from the Confessions album.
Yeah.
I guess I just never listened to the album all the way through.
Which is still a hilarious album. He's like, I cheated on my wife. Here's the story. I made, I don't know what, 8 to 12 songs about how I cheated on my wife. And guess what? There's a part 2.
That's didn't Weird Al make like a part 12?
Yeah.
These are my confessions. Yeah. Anyway, let's get into today's episode. We're talking about something that's a little bit harder to grasp. And I think that this is something that's going to be, well, we don't talk about it unless I think it's going to be helpful. So I think it might be helpful, but I think it might be a little bit confusing and difficult to grasp unless you've done this before. Anybody that's more intermediate to advanced, this is going to be a gentle reminder. For anybody that's new, this is going to seem kind of foreign, but let me emphasize that I think that this is one practical perspective to consider when mixing. That's all it is. And which is the concept of not necessarily top-down mixing. We can talk about what that is. So top-down mixing is after you've already routed everything. So all of the drum tracks go to a drum bus or folder or aux track or however your DAW routes it and whatnot. And then you start, and then you bus everything. You have everything is in buses, and then you start mixing and leveling from the buses. So like some people that do top-down truly like start with the mix bus and then go down to the buses and then go down to the individual tracks as needed. From like, so it's meant to save time, it's meant to be quick, and it's meant to do big, big, bold moves across larger sections than small, delicate moves across individual tracks.
That's kind of my preferred way.
Sure. A lot of people love doing that. A lot of people do hybrids, and then a lot of people do bottom up sounds crazy. But I mean, like, start from the tracks and then go to the buses, more traditional workflow. And there is no right or wrong answer, but the reason we're not here to talk about top down mixing necessarily, but we are here to talk about perspective and the value of perspective. I think last time we talked about Mixer Man's book, The Zen and the Art of Mixing, and we talked a lot about how mixing is just straight up perspective and imparting perspective. I think on the episode with me and James, we talked about like how I kind of like mentally imagine, describe chasing the rabbit down Alice's, like Alice in Wonderland, chasing the rabbit down into Wonderland. And kind of like always running towards inspiration that's always running from you. Maybe we haven't, if you haven't heard me talk about that, maybe it's because it's on the exclusive episodes available on Patreon, mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. But one of the things that I think is really important to impart specific perspective, I've had a client recently, and a friend, not just a client, but also a friend as well, that is obviously very intelligent and just incapable of seeing past his own overthinking. Like, he's just an overthinker. And that's it. There's nothing stopping him other than him overthinking it. And overthinking leads to a lack of trust in self, a lack of trust in your own instincts, and more difficulty gaining confidence in your own creation. At least that's how it's portrayed through him, right? In this specific instance. Now, the reason why I think this episode is super important is because the only thing I think he has the ability to do exactly what he is looking for, what he wants out of his songs. And the only reason why he's struggling is because he's lost perspective. How do you get back and maintain and gain that perspective? And I think one of the ways to gain it is actually a concept that was brought up to me that I agree with from Caleb Loveless, who is, I think he's currently the owner or at least one of the top dogs of Mastering.com. This show is not an endorsement of Mastering.com. I'm not here to say good things or bad things about Mastering.com. I am not endorsing you go take their courses. I'm just saying that this is the conversation that I had with the owner, Caleb Loveless, who's a friend of mine since before he was on. He became part of Mastering.com. And we talked about how his class teaches mixing, but from a mastering perspective, which led me down a thought of why, when people ask me, DK, how do you approach mixing? How do you think about mixing? Which is a difficult question to answer because it's not just about what I'm thinking about while I'm mixing, which I'm not because I'm in total flow state. But then I have to practice articulating the things that I subconsciously did while I was mixing. So it's like two different meta skills that I have to combine in order to properly articulate what I'm doing in this moment of Zen, like of extreme focus and non-self, right? And so I'm going to attempt to do that today. And I'm going to say that I think that when I, because of my experience doing mastering alongside mixing, when I hear a song for the first time, play the rough, and I listen to the rough the first time through, whether I'm doing notes in the comment sections or leaving markers with notes on the markers, or I have a literal pen and paper that I always have on my desk next to me, or I'm like taking mental notes, doesn't matter how I do it. But when I listen to the rough for the first time before I start a mix, I'm listening completely emotionally. Almost, you could kind of say from a mastering perspective, this section needs to be bigger, this section needs to be wider, this section needs to be more dry and quieter, this section needs more pressure and needs more compression. This is a drums-driven song, so I need the drums to really hit alongside the vocals, maybe even like prioritizing those things, like vocals, drums, whatever, and in the perspective of the emotional thing that I'm feeling. It's almost 100% emotional. And when I'm in complete total flow state, my plugins and tools almost have no space in my thinking. They're more like, I have this one specific feeling that I want to get. These are the typical tools that I usually use to get to those feelings. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And I'm very easy to turn off and on the plugin, see if it gets to where I'm going, because it's that destination in mind, something that we've talked a lot about, where like an advanced mixer knows where the song can go and takes it there, where a beginner to intermediate mixer is looking for the end game while they're mixing. We've talked about this. So it's keeping the end game in mind, looking at a mix from a mastering perspective. And then if you're producing, even going as far as looking at the production from a mixing perspective.
Yeah, honestly, I agree. The biggest thing that I take note of whenever I'm mastering records for people is typically like how you said, like, okay, this section to this section, how are we listening to it? Recently just had, it's been a while since I've had something I've worked on mastered by somebody else. Not because I don't send my stuff out for mastering, but because I get a lot more work in mastering than I do mixing. And so a record that I didn't actually, I'll be honest, it was a live recording. It wasn't something that was meant to go to air. It's just, do you remember the story around Million Dollar Baby where his fan base heard the snippet that he posted onto IG and they're like, oh my God, it sounds so good. But in reality, it was like the distorted audio from Instagram and everything crushing it. So they had to revise the mix to kind of match that vibe to make it feel that way. Well, he released a recording of a show that we did together that I had just mixed at home out of vibe. I just wanted it to feel good, right? I kind of knew what the stow of the sound is, so I made it feel like we were live. And so the whole thing sounds really live. You can even hear the audience in the background. But the notes we got back from mastering was kind of cool because it was nice to see that other people were also listening for small elements in the mix, not just the overall tone or loudness or if anything's clipping or if there's like interstample peak. So his note was, hey, it sounds like this word got cut off. Was that on purpose? That was the one note I got back from mastering. It had nothing to do with loudness. It had to do everything with just a small detail in the mix. And it was when the artist pulled away from the mic during the performance. And so it was kind of cool saying that this mastering engineer is caring about elements of the mix that in all reality, I didn't think too hard on. Because once again, it's live. It's rock and roll. It's we're not thinking too hard. The guy's dancing on stage. So if one word got cut out because he walked away from the mic, that's kind of normal. But it was refreshing to see that from other people. Because a lot of times people look at mastering as the stage where you just make things louder and sound a little better. But sometimes it's a little more than that. Because if the mix is good, then there's usually nothing to report back to the engineer unless you want to be so nitpicky that because there is something that you're like, hey, it's a little muddy around the reverb and the vocals. Like it sounds like it's clouding a little bit. Do you want to correct that before I send you back a master or do you want me to just master it as is? But it also is one of those things, like when you're listening to other people's records and hearing things, it's something that you start putting into practice for yourself. Now, I'm not saying go around mastering for people and then figuring out what's wrong with everybody else so you could be better or whatever. It's kind of cool to see that everybody's human in the mix, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You bring up a really good point, which is it's not about learning the skill of mastering for mixing or learning the skill of mixing for producing.
But learning what you're listening for and the common mistakes that you'll find around everyone, even at a high level.
Yeah, I think it's more, the perspective. I think it's more about knowing the end game, keeping the end game in mind before starting.
Yeah, sometimes it's on purpose because it's part of a vibe. Like I said, in this live version, there's a ton of bleed that we had a mix around. And to be 100% honest, when I sent them the mix, that was a year ago. And I never asked for a payment, never asked for royalties, never asked for anything because it was just something for us to enjoy in a group chat. His fans just liked it. So when it went to mastering and the one note I got back was, oh, the vocals dipped out. I'm like, yeah, we didn't think too hard on this. But if somebody's being very critical about their mix and all that, and that's a detail somebody else brought up, they would super appreciate knowing that. We would all love to know if it sounds like one of the vocals got cut.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to think here. The point of this episode, I think, is mostly just remind everybody to... I did a better job explaining this, in an exclusive episode, but me and James, we talked about the ability to do this. It's not about looking... Like, think about this as a lens, right? Where you have a further out lens, like a 100-millimeter lens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that in the world of photography, you could shoot from a lot further back.
What do they call that? Telescopic or something like that?
Sure. Yeah. You know, and then you have the exact opposite, which is like super wide angle, very close macro lens, micro lens or whatever they're called, right?
Macro.
Macro lens. So you got the micro and the macro. And one way of looking at it is some people are better at the micro. Some people are better at mixing from like a macro perspective. But I think like real creativity and really high level engineering and just in general creativity and artistry, we could extrapolate this into many things, is not the ability to see far and to see up close. It's the ability to quickly focus between. Does that make sense? Like if you ever watch, like one of the things that we've talked about specifically is there's on YouTube classes, live streams of me mixing, of Lou mixing, of Jesse mixing, Jesse Ernster mixing, other people mixing. And you'll notice like some of the top mixers in the world, they have this uncanny ability to, I think from like a very, in a very loose perspective, it looks like just straight ADHD. Like you'll be like, here's the guitar and then go into the reverb for the vocal and then go into like the width of the snare drum and then, you know, whatever. And then you're just like kind of going back and forth, this ability to go back and forth. I don't think it's, it could straight up be just like ADHD or like impulsivity, but I think that it's actually more like, even if you're very impulsive, it is very difficult. And it typically costs a lot to switch tasks like that. Like it's not free to be able to switch thinking and switch gears. It usually takes a lot to switch between that. Like, and that ability to focus between the micro and the macro very quickly, I think is the skill that most people should be aiming for.
Yeah,
being able to look at the drums as a whole versus the tom and then going back to the vocals. And then when you're looking at the vocals, thinking about how the, like being open to the idea that the reverb is messing up how, where the guitars are sitting.
Yeah.
Right. So it's this ability to kind of like see everything from where it is and then be able to come up close and then be able to look far real quickly. Anyway, that's like, I had a bad time describing that metaphor, but you understand what I'm saying, Luke.
Yeah. One of the big things that I really like about the Nashville side of the scene is that they like to do a lot of things live. A good example is Vance Powell. Vance Powell, I don't know why he doesn't get as many flowers maybe in our side of the hemisphere bubble, maybe because we're just a different town doing different things. Maybe that's why. But I've always thought what he does is pretty cool because he's got this like, one of my favorite things about him, this is a complete side ADHD note, but his live room, instead of having like diffusers, he hung fucking doors, like actual like house doors, and just put them at odd angles and stuff like that. So his live room, when you look up, you look like you're about to be smashed by raining doors. But he's a big believer in like, let it bleed. I don't care. You know, if you hear the drums and the vocal mic, I don't care. Let it bleed. That's cool. But when you listen to his records as a record, it sounds like an actual studio cut record. It doesn't sound like somebody just did it live and said, cool, here's a simple mix. And I think that's kind of impressive because a lot of people will try to, let's say, noise gate everything out. And so, like you mentioned just a moment ago about, you know, instead of focusing on the toms, you change how you look at drums in general. If you've ever dealt with like a lot of bleed on drum tracks and stuff like that, you'll know that like when the tom comes back in after a noise gate, sometimes it just sounds like the cymbals got a little bit louder because you hear them in the background. And now there's like really nice plugins, like I don't know if it's called like D-Bleed or whatever, but there's some pretty cool like drum noise gating software now. But we didn't have that before. And so I feel like sometimes we get so nitpicky with little things like noise gating that we start to lose the forest for the trees. And that's the issue of like not learning to refocus, like you said. Like if we can't tell where we're supposed to be going, then we start over focusing on the little things that could even though they may be little at first and they might help a little, doing too much of the little things, forgetting about the grand perspective of the record, you could start working against the record and having to undo some of those things to get some of the life back from the record. So, for instance, sometimes making something sound bigger, like in a chorus or a bridge or something, is just more noise, less filtering of frequencies, like just having a little more going on so it just feels and sounds bigger. And that you usually could tell when you start, like, let's say you want the guitars to sound bigger. Instead of turning them up, give them back some of their low mids. You know, give them back some of their range. You don't have to filter out as much. But Vance Powell, Jesse, you and I, and a ton of other people, like, something that we learned with time, going back to the whole, like, we end up undoing what we might have done because we lost the forest for the trees, is the skill set of learning when not to do something because it's not something that really supports the big picture. You know, we talked about in the past the difference between a professional and somebody who's trying to become professional is knowing when not to do something. And that's also part of that perspective change. Because if the drums were meant to feel a certain way, because the record is meant to feel a certain way, you wouldn't over-focus on EQing the kick drum unless the kick drum was that far out of perspective. You know, and that's where I like top down, where it's like, okay, the drums actually sound cool. They sound punchy. They sound live. They just might need a little more lift. They might just need a little more top end. Let's just play with that first on the drum bus. And then if it really needs something on the individual tracks, then I'll focus on that individual track. But learning when not to overdo the little things too soon, too quick, is its skill set in itself that I think, like, as you progress, you will notice that you start doing less.
Yeah. We've talked about that on other episodes where the value that we give is not the time and the effort that we put into the mixes. It's about the song and serving the song. And oftentimes serving the song means not doing anything. So don't overinflate your desire to be validated by doing more.
Which is funny because that's probably the hardest thing for most people starting out and mastering to learn.
Yeah, of course.
When the mix is good, when you're listening to a third party mix, you kind of learn that at a certain point, just making sure that the loudness is there and that it's not clipping is fine. And knowing how to not change the mix by trying to reach these little metrics is a big part of the job.
For sure. So let's talk about...
Being able to tell on your own mix is hard because you've listened to your own mix. You know it in detail. And it's sometimes a little hard, you know, to see what's going on and say, hey, I'm comfortable with this mix right now. It sounds good. We don't need to change too much about it. When somebody else might have listened to your mix and been like, yeah, it's great. Why are you changing so much more of it? I feel like it's starting to go backwards now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something to be careful with, pay attention to. But let's talk about some practical application of this. I think there's a lot of practical application for this. For anybody that's listening to this is like, this is great philosophy, but what does that even mean? So I think one, first off, is when you're mixing, we've already talked about this a little bit, but having the end game in mind. Like, don't just mix for the sake of mixing. There should be something that you're going to. And this is something that we've talked about in other episodes, is that even my six-year-old son, even though he may not have the words and the vocabulary to properly articulate exactly why or why not he likes or dislikes a song, he's able to tell me clearly, I like this song. I don't like this song. I like the piano part in this song, and able to dictate why. We're all born with taste, with perspective. I like that word a lot recently. We're all born with perspective. And the thing with this is that when we use our tools, when we don't know how our tools work, when we're uncomfortable with our tools and we have to think about the use of our tools at any given time, we lose. That is at the sacrifice of perspective. Sincerely. Like, imagine, like in the movie Ratatouille, imagine if the rat, right? Remy?
Remy.
Yeah, imagine if Remy like never got good at controlling. Oh man, I forgot the chef's name.
I did too.
Yeah, hold on. This is important to my.
Yeah, his name is Remy.
Yeah, so Alfredo Linguini. Yeah, yeah. So imagine if Remy never got good at controlling Alfredo. Would he really be able to focus on making the correct sauce, the correct recipes, the correct, like,
he'd be focusing on how to maneuver him more than anything.
Yeah, you'd be focusing on the maneuvering and being like, I don't even know. And then you might even possibly start making moves based on what's accessible. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, if Remy had a hard time, it's like, dude, he's not going to be able to get the salt without burning his hand. So let's just use something else instead of salt. And so then you start catering to your lack of ability.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you start to lose perspective, the reason why I think Ratatouille is a great example is because at the end of the day, ego is just like, give me perspective. And that's when he brings out Ratatouille, right? And then I think that that's like really, really important, is this idea of when, in a practical sense, the tools get in our way. Yesterday, I did a mix a couple days ago, a drummer friend of mine, and granted, a metal drummer friend of mine, came over and he had recorded. He's starting to, well, he's been doing like drum stuff, and I just released one. He just released one today that I posted on my Instagram story, reposted on my Instagram story. But he's been doing like drum videos of him playing for promotion for his own stuff, going on tour, being hired for recording and stuff. And he recorded and took a video of his drum playing. And then he came over to my house wanting to get some tips on the mix. He said he spent like 6 hours mixing this drum kit. Holy cow. They weren't bad. They were bad. They were bad. And they weren't like horrible. He didn't like ruin them, but they weren't much better than the original state.
Mm-hmm.
They were just different. And I had him show me the original song that he was covering, doing the drum cover for. And then we talked about the different elements that he's looking for in the song and kind of like the emotional impact of that. And then I use stock Logic Pro, all stock Logic plugins, to get an incredible smash sound for this particular record.
I am trying to imagine myself in a room watching you listen to a metal song and be like, give me your perspective on this. It's such a wild thought to think you were doing metal.
Yeah, no, like what exactly about the snare are you looking for? Are you looking for like, at least like, even if it's in the terms of like, do you want it to sound like a gun or do you want it to sound like a really loud snare? You know, like things like that.
Do you want the ring out of it or do you want that smack out of it?
Yeah, like do you want that kick drum to be really clicky or like, and then what is the emotional, like this is meant to be like a very expressively aggressive section of the song.
Mm.
So, okay, that means we're probably going to get, like, technically, that means we're going to get a lot of the click from the kick drum.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, deep smack from all of the instruments. Maybe even some deep, and I know this just from experience, like, maybe even some natural pumping from compressing the drum bus.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the cymbals will start to, like, kind of, like, swell on the hits a little bit. And there's, like, a little bit of forgiveness in the pumping in the cymbals. Because that makes it sound hyper-aggressive.
Yeah.
Right? So these are all thoughts that we were able to create with perspective. And then it's about the tools. Tools that I don't use Logic ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even comfortable with the workflow of Logic. Yeah. But we were able to use stock Logic tools to get the exact sound that we wanted with almost no issues because that perspective never left. Mm-hmm. That perspective was there. And that's kind of the point too. It's not about your tools. You, Lou, you've.
It's a poor workman that blames his tools.
There you go. It's a poor workman that blames his tools, right? And the one thing that nobody can ever take away, and what people are really paying us for, one of the things that clients are paying us for, is that perspective. Just like Remy, it's not about the food. It's not about the kitchen. It's not about the tools or the knives, the sharpening of the knives.
Mm-hmm.
It's about smelling. And what they want in vision and perspective, like vision and direction and how you get there, not about any specific tool or person or way of getting there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess the practical takeaway is next time, like, so if you're a mixer and you're mixing a song that you didn't record, just mixing by itself, then I want you to take a moment to listen to the rough mix, like the whole way through. This is something that you should be doing habitually. I would recommend, you don't have to, but I would recommend you do this habitually. And don't think about compression. Don't think about EQ. Think about the tones and how they make you feel. Mm-hmm. And be open to the idea that the tones that are already there need no fixing if they make you feel a certain way. Think about the feeling. Does this give me the calmness? So like the song is trying to tell you something. This is meant to be a calm, intimate, and open song. Do the frequencies in this guitar add to that calmness, that openness, that intimacy? Is the noises in the background? There's some like jazz piano records that I listen to where like the creaks of the piano and the pedal being pressed down kind of adds to the intimacy. The room. Yeah, the air in the room, yeah. All of that adds to this emotional thing. Do you think like, or on the opposite end, ooh, if this part was slightly more distorted and clipped, it would really feel, it would like really blow the top off the idea of like, of aggression. Like this would become like really much more aggressive. And I think that would, that's what's needed for the song. Think less about like the technical how to and think, just sit down, listen to the rough, be open to what the rough is trying to tell you, what the producer, the artist is trying to portray in this song. And then think about how different technical elements in the mix could better portray that those feelings. The feelings that you perceive and then how you project those feelings through technical ways is your perspective. So if you're mixing, take a listen to the rough mix, even a couple times if you have to, and just note the feelings. Emotional descriptive adjectives, emotional words, not technical ones as you listen through. And if you're a producer or a recording engineer, think about it from a mixer. Think about arrangement in the sense of frequency, right? Think about general volume changes and sections. This goes into arrangement. Think about sections from like volume perspective, from like density perspective. Like try, it's not about being a good mixer, but it's about, I think a great producer, a great composer will arrange and produce a record to be well mixed, like that suits a good mix. And this is all something like more, again, another way of thinking about giving perspective to your segment of the song. And this is a big part of the reason why this is to no one's fault. This is an overgeneralization that I think is going to be useful to prove a point. Not that this is objectively true, but there's probably not a single person in this world that can write, record, produce, record, mix, then master their own song and have any sensation of perspective during the entire process. That is not possible. And this is the only reason why you would hire out. If the goal is to make more expressive art, you would hire art out. If the goal is to do something on your own, and that's part of the beauty of this, like for example, like if I'm writing a song for my new child, I'm probably going to want to do everything myself because it's about me doing it, not about making a good song, you know? But if the goal is to make a good song, you must hire out, not because you're incapable of doing it. Last week, I had a mixer, a mixer friend that is honestly does more numbers than me. But by God, yeah, no, he sent me a mix to like just listen to it and give him feedback. And he had just lost all perspective in a way that was just like, turns out he had produced it and recorded it. And like, he had like a very uncharacteristically bad mix. Because he usually does a super good job. And he might be listening to this episode. And I'm slightly exaggerating a little bit if he's listening, but you know, it's so easy. Like this guy is such a good mixer. And yet he was just incapable of doing that. Same thing with me. I'm not able to do that as well. Nobody can. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I think all my worst mixes were songs that were mine.
Yeah, that's not super normal. Yeah, it's like, it's not even impressive if you could do it all yourself. It's more just like dumb. Like, why? Unless that in itself was the meaning. Again, like the immediate example that comes to mind is like writing a song for your child, again, or like for your girlfriend, spouse, wife, husband, lover. Cat. I don't care. Cat.
Yeah.
That it's like the point is the effort. Then that's different.
Yeah, it's always going to be kind of an interesting time if you're taking tracks. We talked about this before, but if you're taking tracks from online, trying to practice mixing, the thing that you don't get to practice is actually understanding mixing for someone else, because at that point, you're still kind of mixing for yourself. This is just kind of practice. You know, you're just taking a compressor and throwing it on a kick and seeing if you can dial it in, but you're not really dialing it in for any specific reason, which means that, you know, you're just aimlessly twisting knobs and seeing how it sounds. And that could be its own lesson in its own right. But you're more learning the tool than you are learning about mixing, because mixing isn't about the tool.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah, there's really no solution to regaining perspective other than to take breaks.
Yeah.
Like, make sure, like, if you are doing every part of the process yourself, I'm not saying that you can't do it, but you have to give yourself ample breaks. And sometimes an ample break is like a week.
Yeah.
Of like not listening to it. Not a week of you taking it on your headphones and then listening to it like 50 times a day, all day, every day for all 7 days during the week. That's not it. That means like not listening to it a single time for a week. And yeah. sometimes that means just not listening to it for 2 hours. Or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know? Who's to say? Sometimes it's a year. There's no set number on this, but you must be able to look at it with a fresh perspective, because perspective is everything. Art in general is nothing but just perspective manifest. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to get into the depth of that. But yeah, this is a big part of why mixing is still one of the biggest and final crossroads between the intersections of creativity and technicality. The only reason why it isn't a more technical skill is because of that perspective that we impart, mm-hmm. that we cannot avoid from imparting, no matter how unbiased we try to become. So that's it. That's this episode. Let's just try to think about it, not like mixing top-down technically, but think about it from a top-down perspective. Think about it from the goal of the song, the perspective you're trying to impart, and then go from there. Oh. Any other thoughts, Lou?
No. Realistically, we said all that I can try to say in such a small way. You know what I mean? What is it? Just honestly move with inspiration. You heard the record, it made you feel a certain way, and just chase that. But anything else, if you overthink it, just like anything else in life, I said it earlier, you're going to lose the forest for the trees. Just try not to hyperfixate over little things. Try to keep that perspective, and you'll be fine. It may not be your best mix every time, but at least it's a more defined mix. It's something that you were actually after versus where you just ended up at.
Exactly. And this is another thing that we've talked a lot about too, which is the idea that like most beginner to intermediates are still learning their tool. It is inevitable and impossible to avoid this valley of technicality where you're just going through the desert of perspective and emotional availability to learn how a compressor works and sounds. It's like that's an unavoidable part of the process and why you cannot negate experience. It's like the jazz player, in order to have conversations with other jazz players on the stage, you know, and to improvise, like you have to just grind your scales. You just have to grind your scales. And that sucks. And there's no art in grinding your scales. It is void of all art. But you have to go through that in order to get to a point where it finally becomes art.
I kind of want to hear a pestering child that doesn't want to practice their skills yell that out loud one day. This is not art. This is void of art.
Exactly. That's me as a 4-year-old. Anyway, no, I just teased
it. So you got to eat your broccoli. This is not broccoli. This is void of substance.
sustenance. substance and sustenance thing. Yes. that's the thing. Anyway, we're getting off topic. If you are finding yourself in that valley of technicality before the plateau of perspective. Ooh. The valley, it's like the the valley of technicality before the plateau of perspective. Oh, that's good. I'm going to keep using that.
You should write it down.
Yeah, we're going to, if you were in that valley right now, trying to learn your tools, trying to understand how it works technically from a mixing perspective, then what you need to do is subscribe to the Mixing Music Podcast exclusive content, where me and James break down different clips, talk about different technical things, oftentimes give homework for you to do and ideas to try out. And then you go ahead and try it out. And there's a ton of episodes about all these different things from phase correlation, EQ, compression, saturation, clipping, widening, reverb, effects, vocals, drums, mastering, you know, all of these different things in different bite-sized episodes. We have over 250 episodes out, right? At this current point in time in February 2025. And we release either two episodes a week or two shorter episodes a week or one long episode a week. And they're all ad-free for $4 a month. Go to www.mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive, where you'll get thrown into our Patreon page and not only get access to our exclusive content that you can then upload the custom RSS feed into Apple Podcasts if that's your native platform or whatever native platform you use, or is available natively on Spotify. If you connect your Spotify to your Patreon account, it'll unlock a natively hosted exclusive RSS feed on Spotify. You can do that too. And then you get access to our internal, if you link your Discord to your Spotify, then you get access to our subscriber-only Discord channel. And then there's also ways that you can DM and communicate with me and Lou directly on Patreon. We eventually might start doing other things like give merch to those that have been longtime subscribers, or do live stream and maybe continue doing mixed feedback specifically to online exclusive subscribers once we get more people on the platform, like we used to do on mm-hmm. on Twitch. Anyway, lots of cool ideas that are happening. Just go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. And even if you don't care for the exclusive episodes and you just want to give a tip and be a reoccurring subscriber in that sense. Just subscribe to our Patreon. That helps a lot. See, that's like the only way that we monetize our podcast. One of the only ways. All right. On that note, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast/exclusive.